Call Back the Past.
As far as the young generation was concerned, 1926 was little different from any other year, as once again their elders shook their heads and dismissed them with the then-current phrase, flaming youth. It was the era of the Charleston and the Black Bottom, of speakeasies and bathtub gin, of the flapper and the rumble seat, and the blues of Jerry Earl Morton. The 50th anniversary of Alexander Graham Bell's telephone patent was marked by the establishing of a transatlantic radio telephone link in 1926, a year which also saw the publishing of books by Ernest Hemingway, The Sun Also Rises, T.E. Lawrence of Arabia's The Seven Pillars of Wisdom, Edna Ferber's Showboat, and Topper by Thorne Smith. And in England, establishing herself as a character comedy actress was the future Mrs. Charles Laughton, appearing under her maiden name of Elsa Lanchester, in a review called Riverside Nights.
Thou poor old Mr. Grummet passed away, Mrs. Thomas, and all through eating unripe plums they say, Mrs. Thomas, it's funny, don't you think, he never touched the drink, and yet he had to die, as might be you or I. As I was saying only yesterday, Mrs. Thomas, isn't any use to fight our fate. Well, if it isn't gin, was meant to do us in, the chances are it's lemonade or date. I never been such saints as my two brothers, yet both of them had asthma bags, my dear. Teetotalers seem to suffer same as others. Knocking off the beer. It only shows how careful one should be, Mrs. Thomas. It's flying in the face of nature, see, Mrs. Thomas. If he'd been sitting here with half a pint of beer, would he have ate that plum and gone to kingdom come? As I was only yesterday, Mrs. Thomas, it isn't only drink that does the harm.
Milestone of the movies in 1926 was a sound picture featuring John Barrymore as Don Juan, while the silent screen put Ronald Colman in Beaugest, Ramon Navarro in Ben-Hur, and Clara Bow in It. Thousands of hysterical women flocked to the funeral of silent screen's great lover, Rudolph Valentino, while across the Atlantic, Britain was locked in a general strike that threatened to involve the country in civil war. In the absence of newspapers, radio played a great role in communication, and the BBC news broadcasts often sounded like this.
Here is the last news bulletin for today. The following items of news indicate the general situation in the country. Copyright in these items is reserved outside the British Isles. At the High Mass in Westminster Cathedral today, His Eminence Cardinal Bourne made the following declaration. The time through which we are now passing is of exceptional character, and the present strike is of a nature quite unlike the many others which have preceded it. It is necessary that the Catholics should have clearly before their minds the moral principles which are involved. There is no moral justification for a general strike of this character. It is a direct challenge to a lawfully constituted authority and inflicts, without adequate reason, immense discomfort and injury on millions of our fellow countrymen. It is therefore a sin against the obedience which we owe to God, who is the source of that authority, and against the charity and brotherly love which we owe to our brethren.
Portugal saw change in 1926. With the overthrow of their republican government in an army coup arranged by General da Costa, while in the Far East, Chiang Kai-shek set out to unify China with a provisional government at Hankow. America celebrated a 150th anniversary with an exposition at Philadelphia in 1926, a year which provided one of the boxing surprises of the century as Jack Dempsey lost his heavyweight crown in a 10-round bout against Gene Tunney. And this was the voice of the year, Paul Robeson.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. A long ways from home.
Aviation was making progress in 1926. Byrd and Bennett became the first to fly over the North Pole, and Alan Cobham pioneered the possibilities of long-distance travel by flying from London to Cape Town and back. Flying in general was a dangerous and exciting business, as illustrated by Sir Alan Cobham now.
I went out the old route, you know, down through, across France on a seaplane and landed at Marseille, and then on to Athens, and then I hopped over the land and landed on the Tigris, and straight on down to Basra and landed on the Tigris again, and then down the Persian Gulf in terrible conditions on rough seas, and the Karachi, and went across the rivers of India. But of course, you know, at Basra, poor old Elliot was shot by an Arab while we were flying at about 50 feet in a sandstorm. That was a sad story. However, they gave me another man, the Air Force, Sergeant Ward, and I carried on from there. When we got through India, and we were lucky on the outward journey to escape the monsoon, we just got in between it, down to Singapore via Rangoon and Moulmein. Then from Singapore we came straight on along to Java, and straight on then to Bali, and through Bali to Kupang, and across to Darwin. And I threw the whole journey over this dreaded sea that they talk so much about, a journey of about 400 or 500 miles, at about 25 feet. Against a 20 to 30 mile an hour headwind. And we were only too lucky, to just hit up on Bathurst Point, and so we made it. And there we took our undercarriage off, met by the Australian Navy, and flew as an aeroplane all around Australia. Came back again, put our floats on, and got back home.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, The Constant Wife, and Shauna Casey's The Plough and the Stars were plays of 1926. The season also providing some fine musicals, notably O.K., Countess Maritza, and the big hit of the year, The Desert Song.
Oh,
Several ladies made headlines in 1926. Famed crack shot of fact and fiction Annie Oakley died that year, while Gertrude Edderley from New York became the first woman to swim the English Channel. Also providing gossip for the News Hungry was self-styled religious leader Amy Semple McPherson, with a well-planned and much-publicized disappearance and then rediscovery. Another lady from Australia was making one of her final farewell performances. In 1926, it turned out, Nellie Melba really said goodbye at Covent Garden's Opera House. Author Beverly Nichols recalled,
"For me, the 20s will always have a special poignancy, because music has always been my first love, and it was in 26 that the most beautiful sound I ever heard in the world, and possibly the most beautiful sound there ever was in the world, echoed through Covent Garden for the last time when Dame Nellie Melba gave her farewell performance. The King and Queen were in the royal box that night. The whole place glittered with diamonds, and there was something in the air that proclaimed that this was an historic occasion. Melba didn't look a young woman, because she wasn't a young woman. She was an old lady. She was shortish and rather square. In middle age, she'd been very plump, but as she grew older, she became comparatively thin, and she was always very proud of the fact that she hadn't got what she used to call a butty. She used to turn round sometimes with great glee and point out the fact she had no behind, which was a permanent consolation to her. She wasn't a great actress, and oddly enough, she wasn't particularly a musical woman. Her taste in music, on the whole, was second rate. I mean, her masters were not Mozart and Beethoven. They were more Gounod and Puccini. None of this mattered in the faintest degree. It was totally irrelevant, because when she opened her mouth, out of it came sounds which just don't exist in the world today. But we can still hear those sounds, because that farewell performance was recorded. And as you listen to it, remember that the singer was nearly 68.
Back the Past was devised and presented by Percy Seath and comes to you by courtesy of the Springbok Radio Preservation Society of South Africa.